Episode 16, The Swamp and the Grace of God. The new painting in the Temple of the Teacher at first glance looked creepy. The central place in it was occupied by a man, waist-deep in a swamp. The lower part of him was covered with toothy monsters. They entwined around his legs with their bony arms and slimy tentacles, preventing him from finally getting to the surface. The man stretched up his arms, froze with an expression of extreme suffering on his face, and from the upper part of his body, from his hands, from his neck, and from his head, brown slime was dripping. In the upper part of the canvas, the Lord God was depicted in the form of a wise, gray-bearded old man, with his arms outstretched to the sides. He looked at the man with compassion, with a willingness to accept him and save him from the vile monsters. Radiance came from the figure of God in heaven, and bright rays illuminated the world, filling it with goodness and love. The students quieted down, looking at the artist's work. The man striving for God, the monsters, the grimace of pain, the hands helplessly stretching up, the slime flowing from the body, and at the same time, God giving grace. All this stirred the feelings of the viewers, caused empathy, aching longing in the soul, yet at the same time, hope for salvation. When the keeper of the knowledge entered the hall, the students were set up for a spiritual search, and they already had questions that needed answers. "Beloved teacher, we have a new painting," one of the students respectfully addressed him, a middle-aged woman with high cheekbones and expressive, transparent green eyes. "Tell us, please, what does it symbolize?" The sage greeted the students, looking at them warmly, smiled at the woman, and began to speak. "God is depicted at the top, and below is a filthy swamp where various monsters live. A person swims at the bottom all the time and does not even suspect that there is fresh air above. He lives with monsters who constantly bite him and drink his blood. And then one day he decides to see what is there above. And then he emerges from this swamp. Streams of dirt and feces flow down from him. And he sees that there is fresh air, sunlight, and clouds above. That the loving God is above, who wants to help him to be saved. But the leeches and larvae have clung to him and are dragging him back to the bottom. And every spiritual person is in this position." "And spiritless people?" asked another student, a very young, fragile girl, looking at the master with wide-open gray eyes. "A spiritless person floats in the feces and does not even suspect that there is fresh air and sun above," the keeper replied. And empathy and bitterness from this understanding flashed in his voice. "He does not believe that there is anything on the surface. He wants to settle down in the very swamp where he lives and tries to build a house there, thinking about how to negotiate with the leeches and monsters so that they bite less and drink less blood. But a spiritual person has already realized that there is a way out, that fresh air and another life with God are above. And now he is already emerging from the sewage, but it is difficult for him. The larvae and the leeches pull him back." The keeper finished and nodded to the student, who just at that moment raised his hand and was about to say something. "Great sage, may I give an example?" he asked, stepping forward. And after waiting for the teacher's approval, began his story. "I have an older brother, Dennis, and I explained it all to him about another life on the surface, and he has already begun to emerge from all this." The man sighed, pointing to the lower part of the picture with the edge of his palm. But then, all his compassionate relatives surrounded him, like these very leeches, and began to pull him to the bottom again. His wife, mother, grandmother. And so they all piled on him at once, and dragged him back into the swamp. "And how did it happen?" one of the students asked with concern. "He entered a university, got married in his last year, then started working two jobs." Mark continued the story. "While he was studying at the university, we had lessons. Then it turned out that he wasn't getting enough money at the factory, and his wife began to convince him to work part-time as a street cleaner. Then perestroika began, and the factory was closed. And Dennis kept telling me before that, 'Don't do anything stupid. Your yogis will run away tomorrow like cockroaches, and the factories will stand forever.'" Saying this phrase, Mark depicted the pathos and pomposity with which his brother claimed this, shaking his index finger, extended upwards, in an edifying gesture. It looked so funny that the laughter of the students was heard in the hall. "I remember, he was so sure of it that he told me with such pride, 'The factory is stability. This is confidence in the future, which will always be. And what is your yoga? Pampering. It's not serious.' How sincerely he was convinced of this. And then his factory was shut down. That's how solid his stability turned out to be." The man chuckled, and a light breeze of laughter swept through the hall again. "And then he went to the market to sell clothes, and there he stood for 12 hours, Mark continued the story. "And instead of sublime impressions, he began to receive negative lower emotions, both in the market and in the family. His wife was constantly nagging him that he couldn't earn money. She would say, 'Look, the neighbor earned 3 kopecks more than you, and you just can't.'" Mark finished with sad irony, exaggerating and highlighting the intonation of these 3 kopecks as something insignificant, but very important for Dennis's wife, who was completely in the thrall of illusions. There was also an ironic expression on the faces of the other students, who were closely following Mark's story, which spoke of their understanding and assessment of the situation from the point of view of people who had already risen a little to the surface and had the opportunity to see what was happening more realistically and sensibly. The keeper of the knowledge shook his head. His look said that the situation described by Mark was not a rarity, but rather a pattern. "Low negative impressions surrounded him," he said, "but there were no sublime impressions, so the soul suffocated. Therefore, it is necessary to appreciate sublime impressions and a good environment in which a person can develop. Your brother Dennis got into the wrong environment, started listening to the advice that the larva whispered to him, and lived at the mercy of stereotypes and patterns of society. And that is what happened." Mark lowered his head dejectedly, and the sage sent the disciple a look of support and understanding. "Mark, you did the right thing by telling your brother about life on the surface. You showed him the opportunity, but then it is for the people to choose whether to listen to the larvae and devils or to receive God's help. What a person does, this will happen to him in the future. Therefore, even if a person emerges from the swamp for a short time, this is not enough to finally get to the surface. He still has to break away from all the leeches and larvae that surround him and get God's help and his outstretched hand. And where do we find it? You have already found it. Every spiritual teacher is a hand that God has extended to people. But many do not understand and do not want to believe, adamant that there is no God. At that moment, one of the students, the green-eyed woman with high cheekbones, caught the master's eye, willing to ask a question. The keeper nodded, giving her the floor. Beloved teacher, and what exactly allows a person to surface, to understand that there is something there, above the dung swamp? She asked. It turns out that not everyone has such an opportunity. Everyone who wanted to find out has the opportunity, the keeper answered softly, emphasizing the word wanted with intonation, making it clear that this was the most important and necessary thing. If he wants to, then he can surface and see this divine light. And I also have a similar example, said a student named Maria, a beautiful short woman with soft, ordinary features. My father became an alcoholic because his mother nagged him, saying, "Look, you don't earn money. The neighbor always makes extra money on the side. He buys something cheap and sells it expensive. And what do you do?" Maria so vividly depicted the intonation of her mother that it caused a slight laugh among the other students. The woman also smiled and continued, "And my father did not have an entrepreneurial streak. He was rather an intellectual. He began to develop a hypothesis on how to win in the lottery. He calculated, using the theory of probability, and how often the same numbers occurred. I remember it so clearly as he sat in front of the TV and wrote out the numbers that had already occurred on a piece of paper. He thought that other numbers would be in the next draw since the probability of this was higher according to this theory. Then he went to the kiosk and selected tickets with these numbers, then checked again and filled the paper with formulas again. And that's what all his energy was spent on. That's how he chose the path to happiness. Can you imagine?" Maria smiled again, realizing the absurdity of such an occupation. A rumble swept through the hall. The story had caused an ambiguous reaction. On the one hand, the students, like Maria herself, understood the severity of the situation of a person stuck in the swamp and empathized with him. But on the other hand, they already knew what was above the swamp, and therefore saw the situation from a different angle, all of its ridiculousness, as if it was a comedy of delusions. "He devoted a lot of time to this, did some numerical calculations," the student continued, "but of course he never won. His wife continued to nag him, since his actions did not bring any money, and he did not want to make any other efforts to get rich. And then he couldn't stand it, and found a way out." The irony flashed in the woman's voice again. "He started drinking. Then he started to have a devil-may-care attitude, and no longer paid attention to his wife's cries that he did not earn enough. He drank and he felt good. And she continued to reproach him, saying, 'If you weren't drinking, you would have already been able to become the head of the shop.' To which he answered her, 'Why should I? I drink, and I feel like I'm the head of the factory.' That's how he found a way out of this situation." Maria uttered the last sentence with sadness, fell silent, and looked unblinkingly at the canvas. But it was clear that she was looking inside it, as if staring into the distance. That is why people run away from reality into the world of alcohol and drugs, and there they create illusions for themselves, where they have everything they need, said the sage. Your father was also surrounded by negative impressions and could not escape from them, said the keeper, in a measured deep voice, in which was support, amazing peace, and power. Therefore, we must appreciate sublime impressions if they exist and discover the right environment in which a person can develop. Your father did not receive such impressions and sublime emotions, so it was hard for him to surface, even if he saw that there was another way out, that God was waiting for him upstairs and wanted to give his grace. Teacher, what is surfacing? Maria asked, reflecting on the words of the sage. What does it mean if you look deep into it? What is it manifested in? And what way do you think it can manifest itself in? He looked questioningly at the woman, shifted his gaze to the other students, and paused a little to give them the opportunity to come to an answer themselves. For example, a person can listen to divine chants, suggested a stocky guy with a neatly trimmed beard. Yes, Alan, that is right. This is one of the possibilities. The keeper praised the student. If a person started listening to divine chants, he would experience sublime emotions and tune in to the higher planes, and he would have already known this secret. Teacher, but if a person surfaces, why does he plunge back into this swamp so often? Alan asked again. He rejects this knowledge, falling under the influence of public opinion. He listens to what his mother, his wife, his neighbor, and his boss at work say. And after listening to all this, he ceases to trust and begins to consider spiritual teacher sectarians, so he returns back to his filth and leeches. And the people around him all the time tell him how to live, and he strives to be like everyone else so that everything is as it should be. He is just afraid to live differently. He thinks, if I start experiencing sublime emotions, I will be kicked out of work. I will not buy a car, and I will not finish building the garage. And he worries about how he will continue to settle in his swamp. The keeper of the knowledge paused, and at that moment a girl with a neat short haircut and a pretty blush on her cheeks raised her hand. Teacher, but why does a person who has already seen the divine light and knows that there is another life above want to voluntarily return to this lower world? She asked, with genuine incomprehension. Is he really better off with these leeches and larvae that are constantly gnawing at him? Yes, Victoria. It also happens that it is because of these leeches and larvae that a person begins to slowly see clearly and understand where he is, the sage replied. That is why God planted these most toothy and slimy monsters in the swamp, so that they sting him and give him a hard time. Do you understand? The keeper looked at the girl questioningly. Therefore, a person can already begin to strive for the light. And if there were no such larvae, he would have continued to rummage in the dirt and sewage, building some plans, and whatever else he can make of it and how. The girl listened intently to the keeper, thought about it, and immediately asked another question. Teacher, so it turns out that the swamp is a dream, identification, negative emotions, the larvae that cling and provoke us to all this? That is right, the sage nodded approvingly. Yes, the larvae provoke constantly, but it is necessary for the person himself, because if he had not suffered in the swamp, he would not have wanted to escape, so he would have fallen asleep there and would have lain there until his death. and so they bite him. They do not leave him alone. And then he can start to break out. He must make an effort to break out of this swamp. And what kind of efforts are these? Victoria asked again. To stop listening to his grandma, mother, wife, and all those who pull him down into the swamp, the teacher explained, and after glancing at all the students, looked at Mark. If your brother had stopped listening to his relatives, then he would have started struggling. The swamp engulfs, but a person must overcome this attraction. Due to this, his will and awareness develop, because if he surfaced too easily, he would not be able to resist the force of the swamp and would drown in it again. And if his will and consciousness have already developed, then he will not drown so easily. The students quieted down and listened to the teacher with the greatest attention possible. And when he finished explaining, Alan came forward again, the stocky bearded guy who had already participated in the conversation today. Great sage, thank you for the clarifications, he said, looking at the sage with trepidation. I want to ask, if the position of a spiritual person is just like in this picture, he is half in a swamp, but reaches for the light, then some people in this position go to the bottom again, like Dennis, and only a small number can escape. What does it depend on whether a spiritual person will drown or swim out? A person must have a very strong desire to escape, some strong motive, said the keeper of the knowledge, or he has already suffered and can no longer suffer. This is also a motive, but for spiritless people. Or he just wants light, sublime emotions and impressions. This is already an advanced soul. And then a person already begins to break out of it all. The keeper paused, took another look at the picture of the spiritual man who got out of the swamp, and spoke again. When I was little, I found my grandfather's radio. I tuned it and suddenly switched on some kind of religious station, and I was immediately attracted to it. That is, my soul was already developed. There were spiritual chants. I just started listening to them and immediately felt such grace and sublime emotions. So I listened, and the divine began to descend on me. This indicates that the soul was ready, and it immediately responded to the call. And if the soul is not ready, then the person hesitates, doubts whether to return back to the swamp or to do spiritual practices. Such a soul has not yet matured. It is still thinking whether to dive back into the swamp or to go to the light slowly. And so he swings up and down. Teacher, where does this maturity come from? Mark asked after listening to the sage's explanation. Is it possible, for example, for the soul to become wise when a person has not suffered yet? Maybe the experience of incarnation affects. A good question, Mark, the sage praised the disciple, and began to answer. The soul can become wise quickly, but it must want it. There must be a strong desire. If it exists, then the soul finds some source. For example, religious broadcasts, as in my case. And then, for example, I also read atheistic books, because at that time, there was no religious literature at all. I read them and wrote out quotations from religious books from this atheistic literature, collecting the knowledge bit by bit. I mean, if there is a desire in the soul to become wise, it will find a way out, find a way to gain the knowledge. And if the desire is weak and unstable, then the person will surface and dive back, and so on constantly, up and down. When the keeper uttered the last word, Philip, a tall, broad-shouldered man of about 40, raised his hand. "Teacher, can I also give an example?" he asked, and, catching the master's approving look, took more air into his lungs, as if he was going to dive deep underwater. "In my youth, I had a very good friend, Victor," he began, "and we communicated very well with him, and started doing yoga together, doing practices, meditating. And together with him, we surfaced out of this swamp. But Victor, apparently, had a weak desire, as I now understand. And he only had a strong desire to become a paratrooper. He watched movies about paratroopers and thought, 'Now I'm going to be just as cool, and all the women will be mine.' And it seems that he had a desire to develop, but the goal was mundane. And so he joined the paratroopers, got into the camp, and he said, 'Why do we carry bricks from place to place all the time? When will they teach us fighting techniques?' And the foreman answered him, 'A paratrooper is an eagle for 2 minutes when flying with a parachute, and the rest of the time he is a horse. Whatever the soldier is doing, the main thing for him is to get tired before lights out. While we don't know what to make you busy with, carry the bricks back and forth, from place to place until lights out.'" Philip was so fervently telling this dialogue of his friend with a foreman, and the situation itself seemed so absurd, a concentration of human stupidity, that involuntary smiles appeared on the faces of many students. Laughter was heard in different parts of the hall. Of course, the students did not stop empathizing with Victor, but looking at the situation from the perspective of people who had received the knowledge, they now treated it more easily, since they had an awareness of why this was happening, and why such seemingly absurd situations became real and repeated throughout the history of mankind. And then he got to Afghanistan, where he was almost killed, then fell ill with typhoid fever and returned home barely alive. He didn't become cool. They didn't teach him anything. His health was ruined, and all women, on the contrary, ran away from him. So it turns out the desire was good, to develop, but the goal was low, so everything turned out so badly. And then, such half-heartedness, uncertainty. It seems that we continued to do yoga and karate with him, but again he did not have a strong desire, so he could not escape from the swamp. Philip plunged into memories, and a sharp mental pain was reflected on his face. Seeing this, the keeper looked at him with absolute, all-pervading love, and from this one look, the disciple's face smoothed and lit up with inner light. "You should not blame yourself for this," the sage said in an even, deep voice, and the disciple nodded. "You did everything you could. To come to the surface, a strong desire must be in the person himself. Only then everything will work out." "Teacher, how can this desire be made strong, sincere, and stable?" asked Maria, who, like everyone else, was closely following the conversation. "Why does it fade? I judge by my experience. On the one hand, I understand that this is not just a desire, but already an aspiration. That is, I am already taking steps to fulfill it. And that's why I'm here." The woman took a breath, carefully choosing words to most accurately express the essence of her thoughts and feelings. "And at the same time, I want the desire to become stronger, more intense. How to do it?" After listening to the student's question, the sage readily began to explain. "Maria, that is what impressions are for," he replied. The emotional center is responsible for our desires. Therefore, in order for the desire to flare up, we must receive impressions. Teacher, where do we get these impressions for the emotional center? The woman clarified. They come from art, the keeper of the knowledge answered simply and unequivocally. Art nourishes the emotional center. For example, divine chants. If they play in the background and no one listens to them, or if people are lost in thoughts, then the chants will pass unnoticed for a person, and he will not understand their meaning or experience sublime emotions. And if people listen attentively, if they are anxious, if they dance, then the soul gets impressions. It begins to cry, laugh, and feel grace. Therefore, we need to try to understand the meaning of the chants, to focus attention on them. Then these impressions will reach our soul and begin to change us for the better. It is necessary to appreciate these spiritual impressions. When we get a lot of them, the desire begins to flare up, and we gradually surface. The final words of the Keeper of the Knowledge sounded solemnly, summing up today's spiritual conversation. The students' views were burning with inspiration, for they had just touched the sacred knowledge, and they needed to comprehend everything and come to important realizations. And now, I suggest you do a Natyam dance to practice and experience sublime emotions, said the sage. A charming melody rang out in the hall, and upon hearing it, the students felt a thrill. Their souls burst into inner fire and rushed forward. The melody became louder and more rhythmic. More and more new musical instruments started playing. Ringing bells intertwined with the long trumpet sounds of bugles. Weightless, magical trills of birds echoed them, taking them into exciting distances, prompting them to throw off the heavy burden of suffering, pain, and resentment, to touch the pure light, the space of absolute love. The students got up from their seats, went to the center of the hall, and began to move to the beat of the music, easily, freely, without any barriers, and without noticing how they looked now. Every movement was the movement of their soul, which expressed its divine essence through this beautiful, exciting dance. The faces of some students shone with bright, sincere joy, while others had tears of purification sparkling in their eyes. They flowed down the cheeks, and with each tear, guilt and aching longing came out, and a bright and steady flame of divine light flared up in their souls. The teacher looked at the students with sincere warmth and began to read a spiritual poem that reinforced the sublime emotions and impressions received by the students. To the ringing of many voice streams, I praise God's heaven. From the honey fields of spring, voices echoed to the flowers. He exists. He is our amazing Savior, like an echo in the high mountains, like a whisper of stars in the silence. My wise mentor sings to me. Be blessed, my guru. I love you and I strongly believe in the truth of the holy truth. I'm coming to you in cold and heat. Oh, only to you I strive with my soul. You are my hope and my ray of sun, my light in the darkness. Oh, soon I'll be there where you are, in your place of joy. When the music ended, a wave of pure joy rose inside each of the students, and filled their soul so much that they wanted to share it with others, to tell about what happiness it was to feel God in themselves. Obeying the impulse that arose, the students began to hug with sparkling laughter and happy smiles, to share the sublime emotions they received. They had just touched the helping hand of God, felt grace, and realized that they were no longer in the swamp, but in a wonderful, bright world, saturated with love and light.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.